This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We're spending the hour today looking at voting issues in Georgia. We talked earlier about Donald Trump's claims that the vote may be rigged in November and how the voting system really works. The conversation around voter fraud has mainly centered on the issue of voter impersonation. That's the only type of fraud that could actually be possibly prevented by voter ID laws. But a new report from the nonpartisan journalism project News 21 found it is not widespread, and that's going pretty far, actually. They reviewed hundreds of allegations over the past 4 years from five states, including Georgia, and found none of the prosecuted cases involved voter impersonation. We have Georgia's Secretary of State with us now, Brian Kemp. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
And also with us is Andra Gillespie, political science professor at Emory University. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Brian, we have fairly strong voter ID laws in Georgia. Has the voter ID laws, to your knowledge, prevented anyone from voting in Georgia?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think that was something that came through during our lawsuits that the state won and the Secretary of State's office won on all the voter ID lawsuits. There was never a voter that anybody could find that wasn't able to participate because they didn't have a photo ID. And we've been through, gosh, I don't know how many lawsuits, some of them before I got in office, and I think there was one or two after I was sworn in as Secretary of State. But, you know, the thing that's unique about our law here is if you don't have a photo ID and you're on the rolls, you can still vote an absentee ballot. And we'll also give you a free photo ID if you don't have one. So I think that's unique to some of the other photo ID laws that have passed around the country in the last several years. So we're, I think, on really good ground in Georgia. And I'm not sure what our latest number is, but the free photo IDs we've given out since 2006-07 when it was implemented, you know, the last time I looked, it was around 30,000 or so, give or take a few thousand, maybe 35. That's really not a lot when you hear news stories like I remember back to the North Carolina voter ID debate, and they were saying, you know, there's three or 400,000 people that didn't have photo IDs and this was going to impact them. So, you know, I think there's a lot of rhetoric out there. My philosophy is I do think it helps us have more secure elections. That's why I'm support the
but
legislation.
But when you say secure elections, every investigation of voter fraud has shown that voter fraud that could be prevented by voter ID is basically non-existent. I mean, statistically.
Well, I would say it's non-existent in Georgia because we have the photo ID law. I mean, I don't know how you prove it if you don't have it, because people could go show, you know, in the old days, you could just go show a power bill. Well, how do you know who that person is? So, I mean, you can argue that, but there's no question that having people show up at a polling location and knowing who they are before they vote makes the election more secure.
Andre, your response to that, because some of the investigations that have gone, that went back before we had some of these voter ID laws, have also shown basically statistically no voter fraud in terms of in-person impersonation. However, we have had trouble with some absentee ballot fraud in some very small cases. And there have certainly been problems, like when they study some states, the fraud that arises is by and large much higher percentage are on the part of election officials. So how are we to handle this concept of voter fraud? If there is a problem, where is it?
So I think it's important to consider the history of attempts to restrict the franchise. And that really informs a lot of the debate. So it's not just what's happened in the last 10 years or even in the last 15 years with the Help America Vote Act, which did actually require a different level of identification in order to register to vote. And that was being done in response to September 11th. And so we still have to talk about othering that kind of goes along with that. But from a broader standpoint, if we think about the disenfranchising state conventions at the turn of the 20th century, so the late 19th and early 20th century, where states emboldened by Jim Crow laws changed their state constitutions to restrict access to the vote. And so this is the place where felon disenfranchisement gets introduced. And so this is the place where poll taxes and literacy tests and other types of things get introduced. introduced into the American voting culture, there is this inherent suspicion that any attempt to try to restrict voting is being intended to restrict access to minorities in particular, particularly African Americans.
But is that true? Let's say in a place like Georgia, where, mm-hmm. as Brian was saying, that your ID is free. And as far as I know, Georgia is not one of those states that's closed down offices, mm-hmm. that as has happened in other states where you might end up having to drive over 100 miles to get to a place to get your ID. I don't think that's happened in Georgia. So while the suspicion is there, is that suspicion founded?
So I think the suspicion kind of comes into which states were the first, especially as restrictions on what states could do tightened up, which states were the ones that were the first to be able to do that, and did people say things during legislative debates that would have suggested that they may have been attempting to restrict the rights to vote to some people. So people look at partisanship, and so they look at these laws being put forward by Republican state legislatures in an attempt to perhaps depress the Democratic vote, which, if you look at minority voting rates, you know, African Americans are going to be overwhelmingly Democratic. That's where people start to cry dirty pool, for instance. And so while, as far as I know, nobody in Georgia openly made those kinds of comments, there is evidence
in other states.
Yeah, like Pennsylvania, for instance, where people did openly say that they were trying to depress Democratic voter turnout. So I think because of that, and because oftentimes when states act, they don't act in isolation. States are individual laboratories of democracy, so states usually pick up on things that are going on in other states. It just calls the entire enterprise into question. And we do have to admit that, you know, by and large, most people, including minorities, support voter identification laws because they don't seem that difficult because most people do have IDs. The question becomes, does it have a disproportionate impact on the registration of people who don't necessarily have access to the IDs? So those are the poor, those are the elderly, those are going to be disproportionately of color. And so does it make sense to make it harder for that particular group to vote when the evidence of voter fraud doesn't appear to be as widespread as most people think? About a third of people will say that they think voter fraud is a possibility, but the evidence just doesn't bear it out that happens widespread in this country. I think we have visions of Tammany Hall in our heads, and that really hasn't been the case in the United States for a really long time.
Well, one of the things when you compare, I mean, when, you know, you can talk about all these reports and theories and everything else, but when you look at the numbers, when you compare the 04 election to 08, a presidential year, you know, before and after photo ID, 06
yeah,
to 10.
Yeah, from 04 to 08, I mean, the minority African-American turnout increased 42%. Yeah. Hispanic turnout increased 140%.
And if you were saying that Republican legislators were trying to suppress minority participation, I mean, that's also like saying the Department of Homeland Security is trying to do the same thing to keep people from flying when they're checking your ID, when you have to go through security at the airport or to get other benefits, you know, SNAP and other things where you have to, you know, state Medicaid, I believe, other government benefits, you have to show a photo ID to get. I don't think those legislators are passing that to suppress minorities from participating in that. So I don't really buy that argument. I think the, you know, from my perspective, I mean, our philosophy is to have secure, accessible, and fair elections in Georgia. And we want to make the elections secure, but we also have done a tremendous amount in our state to make it easy for people to participate. When you think about online voter registration, I mean, anybody in Georgia that's got a driver's license can register to vote 24 hours a day, 7 days a week online now.
So what about automatic voter registration, which is something that at least two dozen states are considering it? Places like California have had a huge amount of success. When I say success, they've discovered it saved them money. They've been able to update people's addresses, and it's actually shown that it probably cuts down on voter fraud when it comes to absentee ballots, where there's actually been some evidence of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would disagree with that. I'm not a fan of automatic voter registration. You know, I am a fan of the states running their elections. I think that's a big debate that we're fixing to have. So if California wants to have automatic voter registration, and that's what their legislative leaders want to do, then I think they ought to have the right to do that. I think that would be a bad mistake. I mean, I like the way that we have our voter registration set up here in Georgia. And look, there's some people that don't want to be registered. I mean, it's America. You can make up your mind what you want to do.
Well, they have an opt-out. You can opt out.
Yeah, but you got to opt out. I mean, why wouldn't you let people just opt in? You're having to take the same, you know, same amount of effort to opt out or opt in. You know, why not just let people register if they want to instead of automatically putting them in something? And I think that's going down a pretty pretty scary place, in my opinion, for keeping our voter rolls secure.
So, Andre, what we're really talking about here, and one of the reasons that voter fraud is again rising up, especially here in Georgia, is not necessarily because of the voter ID laws, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think as far as I saw, less than 1% of the state's population here in Georgia actually had to obtain IDs in order to vote, which is tiny. But Georgia is a battleground state for the first time in at least two decades.
Well, in your opinion, it is.
Well, the polls all say that. The polls say that.
Well,
I'll
remind you that
close.
The polls in 2014 said that Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter were beating Governor Deal and David Perdue, and the race was never close. There
so
was
you
no,
don't think that the race is close between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
I do not think we're a swing state to the effects of Ohio and other states.
And he's probably right about that, but for now, we have to look at the level of investment that the major candidates are actually expending into the state, and to the extent that they're spending into the state, that connotes whether or not they think it's competitive, and I think that that's what matters most. To answer your question, Celeste, about what does this mean? I mean, I've written about this. Yeah, Georgia's black voter turnout rates as a function of people who are registered to vote turning out hasn't declined. And so we will see what that looks like in this election cycle in particular. We think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that Barack Obama was on the ballot. So if we look at the 04 to 08 and 12 numbers, that there was a lot of motivation for people to turn out and vote. And I commend this state for not doing things to try to restrict voter access, even though I think we can argue about the shortening of early registration and the complaints. I mean, and if we look at the debates about early registration in the state, particularly in the metro Atlanta region, where we talk about the placement of early voting locations and whether or not it was going to disproportionately affect one group or the other. People might not have overtly made racial comments, but race was kind of at the subtext of those comments. And I think especially for a state that has a checkered history as we do, I think there has to be a recognition and an understanding that any change is going to garner suspicion because there was a past history. It doesn't mean that there isn't room for redemption there, but that people are going to ask the question because the history in this part of the country has, in fact, been very, very checkered. And then also think normatively about what it means to require people to register or to require people to go through hoops. Those inherently, every time you add another layer of responsibility or another barrier to voting, that's going to depress voter turnout. And so I think most people want to make elections as free and as open as possible, and that would be putting as few restrictions in place as possible without allowing people to, you know, without allowing dead people to vote or allowing people to go vote for other people.
I want to bring us back to the issue of voter fraud here. And Brian Kemp rejects the idea that Georgia is a battleground state, but as you say, Hillary Clinton has decided to send a lot more staff down here and investing amounts in the six figures because she believes that it could possibly swing votes here. As I understand it, Brian, you guys have had a number of complaints. This may not be updated, but I read that there were 18 complaints filed so far this year through the Stop Voter Fraud website.
Oh, I would think we probably have more than that. I mean, we get, you know, hundreds of complaints every election cycle. Now, there's a wide range to them. You know, we may get a complaint about somebody campaigning, you know, illegally within 150 feet of a polling location, or we may get a complaint about a polling location not being handicap accessible, somebody having a bumper sticker, you know, on their car in the parking lot. I mean, things that, you know, that is a complaint. We take every single complaint we get. It doesn't matter how big or how small. But then we have other, you know, on the other side, a range of complaints where you have, you know, absentee ballot fraud, intimidation at a polling location, you know, things of that, you know, vote buying, things of that nature.
I would be remiss if I walked away from this without at least getting you a chance to respond to the lawsuits that have been filed in the state of Georgia. There have been multiple ones, Project Vote, the NAACP, and Project Vote has been quite strong in their language, saying that, and I'm quoting here Michelle Cantor Cohen, who's election counsel for Project Vote, who says, "Secretary Kemp is illegally preventing us from figuring out just what exactly Georgia has been doing with its voter rolls." Your response to that statement and these lawsuits?
Well, we'll see what the judge has to say about that. I would disagree with her. We have bent over backwards to provide all of the information that they've asked for, and then they're asking for some things that we had a hard time producing just because of the way our system is. And we're not going to give them complete access to our voter registration system. That would be giving away our security secrets and make us vulnerable to a cyber threat. So I'm not real worried about what she's saying about that. I can tell you that even when the lawsuit was filed, they were asking for something different than they had before. So I personally think she's wasting the taxpayers of Georgia's money, and they ought to stop. But we're going to continue to fight that, and we'll fight the other lawsuits that are complaining about us keeping our voter rolls secure. I mean, it's a 7-year process to remove somebody from the voter rolls because they hadn't participated. And I think any Georgian with good common sense knows that people will actually leave the state and move somewhere else, and they may forget to notify their local election official. If they don't respond, we move them from active to inactive. Still keeps them on the rolls. They can still participate if they show up. But after 2 more general elections, if they don't participate, we'll send them another letter. And after that 7-year period, if they haven't responded to us or shown up to vote or sign a petition or anything else, we will finally remove them from the roll to keep our rolls secure and up to date.
That was Georgia's Secretary of State Brian Kemp and Emory University Professor Andra Gillespie. More of my conversation with them is at gpbnews.org. One lawsuit against Secretary Kemp was filed by Common Cause Georgia and the NAACP. Brinkley Circadakis of Common Cause Georgia says the state unlawfully removed voters from the rolls.
The fact of the matter is that here in Georgia, the way that you begin a purge process in many cases is by looking at that voter's history to see whether or not they voted in the last series of elections. Unfortunately, our Secretary of State looks at that and says, oh, well, this person is eligible for a purge. When you can't do that, you have that right to sit that election out.
Just ahead, we'll continue our conversation on voting issues with a deep dive into the Voting Rights Act. This is a special hour devoted to the vote in Georgia. It's on Second Thought.
Just move on up toward your destination.